Free Energy Now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Join us online at freeenergynow.net. See our past lineup of speakers as well as who we have coming down the pike. Today is February 18th, 2008, and we have as our guest today Lou Camilli. He is the inventor of the Pulse Plug, which is a spark plug that you put into your car and has some amazing properties. It discharges only, or spark plugs typically discharge only 40 watts of power, while Pulse Start discharges 1 million watts. Wow. This high power pulse discharge ignites the compressed air-fuel mixture in the cylinder more precisely and completely, producing up to 12% more torque and 20% better fuel economy. Lou, thank you for joining us.
Certainly my pleasure, but I need to correct you before we go much further.
Okay, go ahead.
Pulse plugs replace spark plugs. They are not a spark plug. So this is really a drop-in replacement for your spark plug. It's an it's an entirely different device.
It's not even a spark plug, but it does the same thing as your spark plug in terms of igniting the fuel.
Right. The purpose for the hole is identical. The purpose for that hole in the cylinder head is to put a device in there to ignite the fuel charge. And that's what we do.
Okay. I have to tell you that yesterday we posted a story from somebody who traveled 24,000 miles across the United States since August. He's been traveling around. He's a healer and a speaker. And, of course, doing all that traveling, he wanted to find some kind of method to get better gas mileage. He tried several different things, including some hydrogen injection into his air intake. He tried another spark plug product, and he was just coming up drawing blanks. So he had some great before mileage, and then he tried your spark plug, and he got 40% improvement in his mileage. And that's documented over a lot of miles with a lot of gas receipts, all of which are on file. So he's a good friend of mine, and so I give it a lot of credibility. And I understand that not everyone's going to be able to get that good of improvement, but there's a testimonial from someone I know who's put a lot of miles into his test.
Well, a lot of things go into better fuel economy, Sterling. He's driving a very large vehicle, 7,000-pound Suburban, as I recall.
Yeah.
And what we have seen is that the bigger the cylinder cavity, let's call it, the better the fuel economy, because when you have big cylinders, it's very difficult to burn all the fuel when you want to burn it before you reach a loss of mechanical advantage. And that's why when you look at small cylinders like these little 2 liters that are running around, they can turbocharge them and act like a V8 because they have much smaller cylinders, they get a much better burn. But these big cylinder cars have a, let's say they're at a disadvantage with respect to using spark plugs as opposed to pulse plugs, because the flame kernel that's created by a spark plug is relatively small. And we did some tests at a major facility in San Antonio looking at flame front propagation, or lighting the fuel. The most important thing to do with a fuel charge is to light it properly. And the more electrical energy that you can couple to the fuel charge at that point, the better your ignition kernel, or the creation of the ignition kernel, is going to be. And during that test, we were twice as good as the best spark plug that they had ever tested.
Mm-hmm.
And that really helps a big cylinder motor.
And that testing laboratory, how many different spark plug types have they tried over the years?
Oh, my goodness. They have what's called a combustion bomb. It is a cylinder that is opaque. It's a crystal. I can't remember the crystal that they use. But it's a small cylinder. They have a spark plug cavity. They fill it with a fuel. And then they take a picture of the flame front propagating 67,000 frames per second. And you generally see about a tenth of a second with all the film. But in that tenth of a second, we grew twice as fast. And he uses that bomb every day because there's new plug offerings coming out all the time. Thousands? I mean, if you look at the plug offerings that are out in the market today, picking one spark plug company like a Bosch, who's been around a long time, they have over 1,200 SKUs, 1,200 models of plugs. And there's five major producers of spark plugs, as opposed to our pulse plug. There's five major producers that are out there that mm-hmm. control about 90% of the market, and they each have over 1,000 offerings. So you could be very busy on that bomb, testing all the different kind of plugs that they come out with, and they're coming out with new ones all the time, specifically for durability.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at a spark plug, the way it's designed, the way it's made, it only has 40 to 50 watts of peak igniting power, igniting the fuel charge.
Mm-hmm.
And over history, because the spark plug really hasn't changed in over 100 years. And there's a very good reason for that. It's done a pretty good job. I'll be the first to admit, I would have loved to design the first spark plug because it's lasted 100 years. I mean, that's incredible. And if you look at the dynamics of the spark, what's going on at the spark, that will tell you why it's lasted so long and done so well. And that is that in the arc channel itself, there's over 40,000 degrees Kelvin of temperature. That is going to light fuel. The issue has always been with this particular type of igniter, a 40-watt igniter, that's enough temperature to light the fuel. And they have tried very hard to get the fuel into the spark area. That's what you've seen over the last 20 years is multi-valve heads. You've seen tuned induction where the intake runners are now all blended so that you get real nice turbulence and mixing of the fuel charge before it goes into the combustion chamber. And if they can get it near the fuel, it'll light. That's why it's done so well. But nobody has ever been able to improve that process until we came along with our pulse plug. And if you look at the technology is actually very old. What we've done is we've put a capacitive element in the spark plug itself that collects energy during the time that the coil is getting up to a voltage level sufficient to ionize and break down the spark gap. We're storing energy, and spark plugs dissipate the energy as heat during that same time frame. So we have a conservation of energy proposition in this particular pulse plug. And conservation of energy, when you conserve energy, you get gains. And those gains are represented in this very large flame prop. So we're able to couple a lot more electrical energy into the fuel charge. And nobody has been able to do this, even though the technology goes back to the 19-teens. There have been any number of patents that have been filed and issued, but nobody was able to make one that could withstand the rigors of an underhood installation. So this is the first time it's ever happened. And we even went to the spark plug companies to have them make it for us, and they couldn't make it. We make this ourselves. And we had to learn how to do it.
Now, one thing for clarification that we've not mentioned yet is your company, Enerpulse, you are the inventor of this technology. You came up with this.
I'm the designer, okay?
The designer.
I'm named on the patent, but I give the all credit to the technology. It goes all the way back to Tesla. And there's some fabulous inventors that are out there that are playing with, they're experimenting with what's called pulse power and the utilization of pulse power in everyday use. And one of the greatest comparisons I make when people say, well, you have a pulse power product, but yeah, I don't understand. I don't get it. And I said, think of a AAA battery or a AA, so that doesn't really matter, but think of a little battery. Little tube battery, you put those little tube batteries in your flashlight and you flick it on and you get this light. That's what a spark plug's like. You take that same battery and you put it in a camera and you let it operate your flash. That's what we do. So you get this intense concentration of energy and it represents the same power supply. So we're taking the same power supply and doing to the spark what a flash does to a camera.
Now, when you talk about Nikola Tesla and pulse power, what comes to mind for me is outside of the realm of the spark plug venue, I'm thinking of work done by people like John Bedini and others who are taking electromagnetic properties of a spark and of a pulsing of energy, and you create a local disturbance in the field, so to speak, and there are unusual properties where rather than a wave propagating, longitudinal is the name of the wave that it creates, where you get this back and forth pulsing.
That's called a ringing wave.
The ring wave.
It's a ringing wave, yeah. It goes back and forth and doubles your power.
It's like the difference between the wave on the top of an ocean that's undulating back and forth and the wave that propagates when you have a tsunami, where you have these very large amplitude things that are going at very rapid speeds and propagating very differently than the waves on the surface. And they go to shore and they manifest. It's really difficult to see them coming until they hit the shore. Is that a good comparison for the difference between, to describe what's going on with this pulse power?
No, because if we're talking ocean waves, the energy that creates a tsunami is enormous. And the energy to create a normal wave is not. And that's why you get those real big swings, is because the energy is so high. If you want to look at the energy output, then you can look at it that way. But I don't want to confuse anybody. We're taking the same battery energy and compressing it.
So the input on your scenario is the same as for a spark plug.
Right.
But what you're doing is you're taking that energy, you're storing it up, and then you're popping it out to your capacitor in an instant, and you're able to accumulate that energy that you have there all along and dispense of it very rapidly, more rapidly than in a spark plug.
Well, it dispenses it in a fashion that creates a very energy-dense corona surrounding the spark gap itself. And that's what gives us the large flame kernel, because we are lighting fuel that's not in the spark gap. We're lighting fuel that's proximate to the spark gap, which is impossible with a spark plug.
Uh-huh. So that results in a larger explosion or a point of detonation?
The two things you don't like to talk to customers about Stirling is, we have an explosion and we have detonation. They go, oh my goodness, my $10,000 motor. Fuel burns. This is the number one question I get, by the way.
Uh-huh.
With that huge discharge, you've got to be hurting my motor. You know, it's got to be hurting everything. In fact, it's actually very beneficial to the longevity of an engine, just the opposite of what you would think. But this large discharge is occurring in about 10 nanoseconds, 10 billionths of a second.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a coupling effect that you don't get with a spark plug, because you are not in the gap, you are outside of the gap lighting fuel. All you can do is light the fuel. You can't make it burn. It's going to burn at its own rate. It's going to burn at a rate dependent on the octane level of the fuel. And what you want to do is you want to start the fuel burn with a very large flame front so that you can burn more of it during the time allowed. And that means that you're rotating the crank and the piston's moving up and down. The faster it moves, the less time you have to burn it. So the more flame front you start with, the more you can burn. And that's where we get a lot of our power, by burning more of it in the time provided. Because you can't burn it all, okay? You're not going to burn it all. As a matter of fact, a lot of the fuel that's in the cylinder in very modern cars today is used by the catalyst in a reducing environment to help with NOx. So you want some of the fuel in the cylinder not to be burned, to get down into the catalyst. And with the new computers today, we didn't know if we were going to be helped or harmed by the catalyst. And it turns out that from all the testing, the ECUs, the algorithms that have been written for the ECUs, they really do like what we're doing. So we've seen some gains along those lines as well.
Uh-huh. What's this doing to the emissions?
Emissions-wise?
Yeah.
The general statement is real easy. Whenever you use, in his case, I lost my train of thought. Emissions. When you use 6% less fuel,
you were going to give the example from Jerry Will's testimonial about his emissions.
Sure.
I don't remember him specifically mentioning. He did mention that his oil seemed to be cleaner. He didn't have a way to quantize that.
He doesn't have enough miles on that car to really start seeing any blow-by. Blow-by is when you ignite the fuel charge, you create a pressure wave, and that pressure wave actually gets by the sealing rings on the piston and ends up in the fuel. You only see that in cars that have an extended wear on the rings. And we've done some testing on older vehicles with 200,000 and 300,000 miles on them, and we've seen a reduction in blow-by. I cannot tell you why that phenomenon occurs other than to guess at it, in that we create enough pressure early that it might help seal the rings. I don't know if that's true or not. All I can tell you is the results that we've seen indicate that we are reducing blow-by with this pressure wave we're creating. But getting back to the emissions thing, it is a very important feature of what we do. We are a clean company. We want to reduce our dependence on foreign oil and reduce greenhouse gases. And if you can reduce the consumption of fuel, you're going to reduce greenhouse gases. I mean, that's just a straight line relationship.
Now, talking along those lines, there are a lot of companies out there with that same objective in mind. We have an index page, several index pages of company after company, product after product, technology after technology that aims to do just that. Everything from pills you put in your gas to liquid additives to magnets that you put on the fuel line to hydrogen injection into the air intake to onboard electrolysis to create that hydrogen and the GEAT reactors and on and on and on. I mean, there's all kinds. And then there's various gradations of each one of those technologies. You know, hundreds of people working on the hydrogen injection, making it more efficient. And from what I can gather, talking about the cost, the investment of money to get the product, in this case, it's your pulse plug to replace the spark plug. Each plug is in the ballpark of $25, is that correct?
That's correct.
And so you're replacing your plugs, and it's a one-time expense. We haven't talked yet about how long these things last, but that's a fairly low amount of time that you're talking about to replace your spark plugs and the cost involved for a substantial increase in mileage. I can't think of anything on my radar screen off the top of my head that is a quicker return on investment than what you've got here.
Well, I like to talk about investment too. If you look at the cost of putting in a spark plug in your motor, it's a sunk cost. The best you can do is return to the OEM state of performance. You're not going to improve it. So if you spend $8 for an iridium plug, it's a sunk cost. It's gone. This product actually pays for itself. And if it only did 2% improvement in fuel economy, it's an improvement over the spark plug, and therefore it is a much cheaper value proposition. The facts are that it, in fact, delivers more than that. And we estimate that over its lifetime, it's going to pay for itself three times over, just based on our averages that we see every day. And that is a true return on investment. So it really wouldn't matter what it costs if it pays for itself.
What is the longevity of the typical plug?
When we first came out, we had, based on a lot of research and testing that we had done, we thought it would be a 50,000-mile plug in general operating conditions. We put two cars on the street. They both ran 50,000 miles. One was a 2007 Mercury Marquis, Grand Marquis, with the 4.6-liter Ford motor. And the other was a Toyota Corolla S that had the 1.6-liter motor. We wanted both ends of the spectrum. Both cars went 50,000 miles with no hiccups. Cars were running fine, even when we pulled them out and examined them 50,000 miles later. So 50,000 miles was a good target. Those two vehicles met it. The facts remain, though, that anytime you put sparks between two electrodes, the gap is going to get larger due to metal erosion or discharge erosion. And the heavier the load, the quicker that occurs because the voltage level is higher.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume that somebody that has what's called a sport compact car with a 2-liter turbo in it that gets on the throttle quite a bit in town and loads it up pretty good, I would expect them to get in the 25 to 35 range. Still paying for itself twice. So from a value proposition, I haven't seen anything out there that compares to this.
And this is something that people could, well, let's talk about it rather than how many times it pays for itself. Just talking about the savings in fuel for the typical person driving X miles per month, What kind of return on investment are you talking about? You buy
somebody,
the spark plug.
Somebody that's driving 14,000 to 16,000 miles a year. If he's got a six-cylinder engine, he's going to save somewhere between $200 and $500 worth of gas. A V8's going to save more than that. A little four-cylinder will save less than that.
And then do math on the how much gas costs. And in the account from Jerry Wills, where he was doing 24,000 miles, he calculated that he saved $2,500 on his trip with an investment of around $200 for 8 spark plugs.
He made out very well.
Yeah.
And we see that in the bigger cylinder cars, as I stated earlier. We see that in the bigger ones and the smaller ones, of course, that are more efficient to begin with, they're lighter. You know, it's all a function of mass, how much you try to move down the highway.
Now, in your spark plug, what is going to be contributing to the longevity, so there's not a perpetual addition that you can just leave on there and never have to mess with again? Why does it degrade?
The electrode material we use is an Inconel. It's a very hard nickel alloy.
Mm-hmm.
We know that when we move down the road and start talking to the original equipment manufacturers, the automakers, that they're going to require a plug that lasts longer than that. The EPA has tried to get a 100,000-mile warranty on the exhaust train, the exhaust, everything involved with the exhaust. And some of the new plugs are approaching that.
Uh-huh.
And we feel that by going to the same materials that they're using, which is an iridium alloy, that we'll be able to get there. Iridium is almost 3 times the cost of platinum. So when you're talking about putting iridium in a spark plug, you're talking about spending a lot of money to build it. And we've already built a number of iridium tip plugs and tested them on the bench. In a very harsh, accelerated test at 35,000 volts, which is higher than you see in a car, and they went the equivalent of 100,000 miles on the bench. So I'm anxious to get some plugs on the road and do some testing with people that really drive a lot. Jerry would be a good one, him driving as much as he does.
Mm-hmm. You've been selling these things for how long, and how many have you sold?
We had a very interesting thing occur when we were ready to introduce the product. We were just starting to build some inventory and decided to introduce the product through a 2-page advertisement in Popular Science.
Uh-huh.
And in this advertisement, it really wasn't an advertisement. It was more of an announcement.
Uh-huh.
We talked about the technology. We talked about why pulse plugs are better than spark plugs. We talked about why they're different than spark plugs. We talked about why they have to look the same, because the physical description of the plug had to be identical if you were going to claim it was a true drop-in replacement for spark plugs. So this is a truly informative article.
Mm-hmm.
I had some of our white paper comments in it, had some of our testing in it, but it was not a call to action. We did not want anybody to call and order plugs. We didn't put our website on there. All we had was the name of the company, Interpulse. That's all we had. That resulted in 1,500 orders in about 2 weeks. People found us. They forced us to take their money because we really didn't want to take any orders, and it was just amazing that it happened. But in answer to your question, this month we're going to pass the $1 million mark in sales, even though we actually didn't open the call to action or the order process. We didn't even have our order processing in place at the time. Since we've had our order processing, which was in August, of last year, August 07, was really the launch. We sold almost 200,000 plugs, over $1 million worth.
Well, congratulations. That's a big milestone. That article in Popular Science, when did that come out?
June of last year.
June 2007. Yeah, I believe that's when we found out about it and we put our page up. Yeah.
But we have, it seems like we've just been around, but we had one person that came in here one day and he's writing an article about the whole thing. He said, this sounds like one of those 20-year overnight successes. So we've been at the Pulse Power Game. We've been at the Pulse Power Game now for 20 years. We've used Pulse Power for other things. This is our first commercial product that we brought out, and it took, like I said, we went to the spark plug companies to have it made, and were rebuffed there. It took us 2 years to learn how to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're made right here in New Mexico.
Are they still being manufactured there?
Yes.
What about international? Are you fulfilling internationally or sticking to the U.S. for now?
As the word of our existence has gotten out, we now have some distributors in the Scandinavian countries, Italy, Korea, Indonesia, Australia, Canada. We're working on a really big deal in India right now, and we're testing in Germany and France. So the international side of it, Europe especially, made a lot more sense to us simply because fuel costs there are so high.
Mm-hmm.
They're paying 3 and 4 times what we pay here, so return on investment is much more important there than it is for us. But $4 gas is around the corner, and I see the activity here from our customers that are fully aware that it's headed that way.
Now, when we talk about spark plugs and the large number of vehicles, makes, and models out there, how standardized are the different spark plug sizes? Is that something that creates a difficulty for you, or is it how many different sizes are we talking about in the U.S. market and then in other markets?
Well, before we put the first design on paper, we spent a lot of time looking at the market to find out how expensive an inventory would have to be to bring a company to market. And over time, over the years, we talked about Bosch and some of the other manufacturers having over 1,200, 1,500 different models. Most of the differentiation between the models has not been in function at all. It's been in primarily manipulation of the working area of the plug, the electrodes, where you see gold, you see gold palladium, you see silver, you see Inconel in our case, you see iridium, you see 1 ground strap, you see 4 ground straps, you see no ground strap. And you start looking at all the different heat ranges. Heat range is the ability of the plug to burn off any residual fuel that is accumulated on the ceramic cone that encases the center electrode so that you don't get fouling. And this occurs when you don't have a real good flame kernel. So when you start looking at all those different things, and we boiled it down to, we want to really offer these products primarily for the on-the-road vehicle. So we took racing out of the equation for now. We have another product for them. But we took racing out of the equation, and we focused just on all of the vehicles that are licensed for street use, of which there are hundreds of millions. And looking at the plugs that are sold today to that market alone is 400 million plugs a year. And in order for a spark plug company to cover those vehicles, they need about 700 spark plug numbers. We were able to cover those same vehicles with only 5 models.
Wow.
Because our plugs don't have to be a specific heat range. We span 4 heat ranges that we've tested at. We can use a much colder plug because we burn more of the fuel around the plug. There's not as much being deposited on the cone. And we don't need the fancy arrangement or the fancy materials in the electrodes because of the type of discharge we have where the capacitor does unload the stored energy. So with 5 SKUs, 5 models, we are able to cover approximately 75% of what's on the street today.
You mentioned one of the designs had some ground wires and things like that. Do those become obsolete? Do you have to remove them, or do you just ignore them?
You mean the ones with 4 ground electrodes?
Uh-huh.
Well, the ground electrodes are a component of the spark plug itself.
Okay.
A typical spark plug has an L-shaped arm that extends over the center electrode. And we're all familiar with that. That's how you set the gap. You open that up or close it. And Bosch has come out with a double where you have 2 of those. And then they came out with 4. Most of the other companies have a version of that trying to sell into the marketplace. But the marketplace is just so commoditized simply because there's really nothing different. The plug still only has 40 to 50 watts of igniting power. And they've been trying to do all these design changes with the electrode to extend the life or the durability. Because none of this changes how it lights fuel.
And in going to the other markets where you have an even more variation in the European, Asian, and other markets, do you still have the same phenomena where your 5 models are able to address most every engine size?
That's one thing about being in a market that's very mature and almost standardized with respect to the physical dimensions is that everything is metric, and going from the U.S. to Mexico to Canada to Europe to Germany, we have the same kind of coverage there that we have here. So we don't need to expand on our models to gather a larger percentage of the market. What we have here is identical to what is over there.
Do you anticipate that you'll be establishing manufacturing facilities overseas so you're not having to deal with shipping from the U.S.?
I think as we grow up and mature and we start to gather a larger share of the market, and we start talking to the original equipment, the automakers, they're going to want production in their neighborhood, and we've thought about that, and eventually we will get there. Our facility here in Albuquerque could not supply the kind of demand that would have anyway, so we have talked about either building our own facilities or licensing one of the other manufacturers to do it. Because by that time, with the experience that we've gained, we can show anybody how to make them.
And how is that going along, talking to the original builders, the Fords and GMs, making any headway there?
Yeah, Ford, GM, Toyota, I mean, they're the big guns in the marketplace. They're probably the last to adopt the new technology. They are very risk-averse. They'll spend 3 years testing the technology or more. They said today we want this in our earliest platform as possible. That platform is going to be 2011, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
We think our real opportunity with the automakers is going to be with somebody like a Honda who claims and is, in fact, leader in the technology area. They brought variable valve timing and lift to the marketplace. They brought multi-valve. They were the leaders. Or it'll be somebody like a BMW who will not be not be happy unless they are the most powerful engine provider in the marketplace, and we do provide significant gains in torque and horsepower. Or it'll be a Volvo application that reduces the greenhouse gases and is safer for their owners. They're on the leading edge, and they are going to maintain that. Or it could be a small manufacturer. It could happen in China. We've tested with one of the largest automakers in China. China now is the number two automobile builder in the world now, surpassing Japan.
There's that company in India, Tata Motors, that's making that pneumatic vehicle. Sounds like they're way out there in the cutting edge. You might want to talk to them, too.
Well, we have our hands pretty full right now.
I imagine.
Yeah, we are testing with BMW. We are testing with one of the automakers in China and another in India. And they are interested in our ability to light fuel in very poor conditions or with alternative fuels. One of the huge benefits that this kind of technology has is the ability to light fuels that do not like to ignite, such as E85. The harder the fuel is to ignite, the bigger the difference between a spark plug and a pulse plug. It's plain and simple. Some of the testing that we did in Australia with E85, we were almost able to duplicate gasoline performance in a dedicated E85 engine. And that was huge. Because that fuel has about 20% less BTU content. And that's really where you get your energy from. So, yeah, we have our hands full right now. It's been an interesting ride. It's getting more interesting every day.
You mentioned that when you first put this article out in Scientific or Popular Science that you had some 1,500 people contact you wanting your product, and you were kind of overwhelmed not being even ready at that point to deliver. You obviously are delivering product now. Have you been able to keep up since that initial flurry of interest?
Well, in the beginning, in our manufacturing process, we were very slow and deliberate, making sure everything was just perfect and all the parts came out just right. And now that we've had some experience with it, we're able to manufacture at a much higher rate. And so that has kept up with the demand and has allowed us to build in some inventory. So as these larger companies get involved with us, that we will be able to fill their order without having to wait for manufacturing to keep up with sales.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always nice when you have a demand that you can't supply. Creates more demand for some reason. But we've and those first 1,500 orders, they just caught us with our feet just flat on the floor. It seemed the longer they had to wait, the more demanding they were and the more orders we got. So that was unintended, but it happened.
Uh-huh.
And now there's no wait at all. We have plenty of inventory in-house and are able to build at a faster rate than our sales are growing. So I'm very confident that as we move forward into the next stage, and this is going to be a big year for us.
Jerry mentioned that when he purchased his plugs, he had problems with one of them, and the next day you FedEx something to him, and he was ready to go.
That's our corporate strategy. This is a new product. This is a new technology. This is something people have not seen before. The product itself is not as durable as a spark plug. It can't be because we need the inside of the insulator to house all of our energy storing capacity. And as a result, the insulator isn't as strong. So things happen in shipping. Things happen when you put them on. And once the public understands and comes to grasp with the fact that this is not your father's spark plug, once they understand that, I think we're going to do okay, because they'll learn that it is more like a sensor than a spark plug, and it's to be treated differently. Mm-hmm. And we as a company are going to stay in front of that curve, making sure that if something happens in the field, just like what happened to Jerry, that he has an immediate replacement and can move forward. We cannot have our customers waiting for product.
One of the things we've not addressed yet, which is a corollary concept to increased mile per gallon better burn, is the effect that this has on horsepower. In his testimonial, Jerry talked about how he got a lot more oomph from his engine. The thing was idling so fast that he actually had to apply the brakes when he was, there was a little issue with the thing wanting to, race away type of thing. What's going on with the horsepower with this pulse plug?
Well, you cannot get better fuel economy if you also do not produce more horsepower, more torque, because the fuel economy savings comes from reduced throttle input. In other words, and the best way to do this or look at this is in a boat. If you're in a boat and you want to go 40 miles an hour, you put the throttle at this point, let's call it, and the fourth notch. When you put Polestar in that same engine, in that engine, you only have to put it in the third notch to go that speed, which means you're using a lot less fuel. Throttle position, because everything is still connected the same way. We didn't change anything. And horsepower and torque, we talked a little bit ago, that when you start with a much larger plane kernel, you are able to burn more of the fuel in the time allowed. And when you burn more fuel, you get more BTU content out, you get more torque.
So you take a company, a vehicle off the manufacturing block, and side by side, one is burning normal fuels, normal spark plug, and yours is burning with this pulse plug. That vehicle has X percent more horsepower. It is performing better than the company specs. And what kind of improvements in horsepower are you talking about?
Well, we get back to the big cylinder, little cylinder. Big cylinders are going to see more torque early on. Little cylinders are going to see more horsepower later on in the RPM band I'm talking about now. Typical improvement in a V8, call it a 5-liter V8 or better, you're going to see 5 to 7% more torque. In a small engine, you're going to see 5 to 7% more horsepower, say a 2-liter. And when you get into turbocharging, the numbers really get nice. One of the things we've been able to do with turbocharged motors, we run a little smaller gap, which adjusts the timing a little bit, not much, but we're able to improve 0 to 60 times as much as 20%. It's amazing.
Huh. Now, when Jerry gave his testimonial, he was saying that he adjusted his gap a little bit smaller than what you had recommended, and he was getting better performance as a result. What would you say about that?
The same thing. We're in the smaller gap on the turbo. It changes timing a little bit, advances the timing insignificantly at idle, but under load, it's enough to make a nice difference.
Uh-huh.
And when you get this big burn, or you get this big discharge, you don't need a large gap to light the fuel. When we were running on a, let's see, we put our pulse plug in an early Buick Riviera that had a 0.080 gap. And we put Polestar in at 0.040 and improved the entire operation of the engine.
I would think that industries such as the racing industry and things like, you know, trucks that are wanting to haul big loads, they're going to be very interested in this product. And you mentioned that you're not addressing the racing industry right now. Do they have different sizes of spark plug apertures than what yours is typically coming out as?
No, most of the issues with racing, they have the same physical characteristics, the same kind of electrodes. The difference is in heat range or the ability of the cone to percolate off fuel that was not burned during the process. If you have an engine that that is using a little oil, you'd want a very hot plug, relatively. If you're in racing and you're at wide open throttle and you're getting most of the fuel burned, you want a very cold plug. And to use the NGK heat range protocol, a hot plug would be a 4. A racing plug would be a 9 or a 10. And everybody else works in between. Our plugs run from, or the equivalency would be a 5 to a 7. So if you have a 5, 5.5, 6, or a 7, you can use our plugs. If you have a plug, I'm going to sneeze. Hang on. Oh, maybe not. If you have a plug that's too hot and you put it in a racing motor, what will happen is that the cone and the electrode will get excessively hot to the point when you introduce fuel, it will self-ignite or detonate. There's your detonation. Detonate before the timing sends the pulse to light the fuel. And detonation or pre-ignition is death to a motor. So you cannot use a hot plug in a high-performance race application.
Before we wrap this up, we've got about a couple minutes here. If people are interested in investing in your company, is there an avenue for that, or are you private? What's your investment strategy?
If everything goes as planned, we should be issuing an IPO in the third year. And an IPO is, of course, an initial public offering. That's when we'll take shares and offer them to the public. So it's a private company right now.
You're in your first year now?
Actually, we're a venture capital funded company. In 2001, we went to the venture capital markets and showed what we wanted to do, and we got funded in 2003. Now, we had a round then, and that gave us enough money to build prototypes, do a lot of testing, and get manufacturing started to ramp up. And then in 07, we had a second round to do the marketing and advertising that's required for this type of product. So we've been to the venture capital markets twice with an A and a B round.
And your website address?
Is pulstar.com. P-U-L-S-T-A-R.
I had pulstarplug.com on our website. You've been able to get it shorter to pulstar.com?
We were very successful in acquiring Polestar, so we're happy to have just Polestar now.
Wow. Nice to have a short domain name.
It really is.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Lou. I appreciate your willingness to come on. This was at the last minute that I called you, and I was lucky to catch you. I give you my best wishes as you proceed, and hopefully you'll be able to keep up with the additional demand as this thing goes out. It looks like you've got a great product.
Well, Sterling, thank you for having me on. We do like to talk about our product and what it does, and looking forward to getting your order.
All righty. Thank you very much.
You bet.
You've been listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Pure Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.